They recognize our faces. They know us. I'm sure that they are now searching for us.
Afghan prosecutors say they're in danger. It's Thursday, October 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghanistan's opium addiction crisis. U.S. global standing rebounds. 2,000-year-old seeds bear fruit. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Former Afghan prosecutors at the Bagram Prison's Legal and Justice Center, where thousands of Taliban and other militants were detained, say they are now in danger. VOA's Wahid Faizi has the story.
Thousands of people were incarcerated at Bagram Prison, also known as Parwan Detention Facility, including Taliban members, Haqqani Network members, Islamic State fighters, and foreign terrorists. Former Afghan prosecutors and staff at Bagram Prison's Law and Justice Center now say they are concerned about Taliban reprisal. A former prosecutor at the institutions who asked not to be identified told VOA that he and his co-workers now live in hiding.
They recognize our faces. They know us. I'm sure that they are now searching for us. If they know where we hide and live, they will target us. They will show us no mercy. Taliban's Emirates has announced general amnesty. But where is amnesty?
The Taliban promised widespread amnesty after seizing power in August. But human rights groups allege the group is carrying out extrajudicial killings of former government officials. In August, a few days before Kabul fell to the Taliban, two prosecutors working at the Bagram facility were killed in Kabul. According to the former Afghan prosecutors, they have been on one of the Taliban's top targets for the past 20 years.
At the time when they were a terrorist group, they would target us. Now that they're in power, they will not leave us alone. They will not leave our families alone. They will not let us work. We are not safe here.
Former employees of the Bagram Detention Facility's legal and justice centers are pleading with the international community to relocate the former prosecutors to a safer location. This employee asked not to be identified.
The most vulnerable group who dealt with these groups directly is still, unfortunately, in Afghanistan. No country has decided about them, the former Afghan prosecutors, or uttered a word about them, and we are very concerned about the situation.
Afghan female prosecutors have also revealed their dread of the Taliban and the tens of thousands of inmates released by the militant group when it took control of the country. Wahid Faizi, VOA News, Washington.
Find more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Myanmar junta minister blames economic woes partly on foreign-backed sabotage. Human rights activists call for boycott of Beijing Winter Olympics. Moscow hosts international talks with Taliban to discuss Afghan crisis. China names former Xinjiang security chief as new Communist Party chief in Tibet. UN agencies say 800 million children in Asia at risk over school closures. Full coverage on all these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for listening to VOA Asia on this Thursday. Among all the challenges facing Afghanistan, the most enduring is its position as the world's leading producer of opium. Growing, cultivating, and selling the byproducts of the indigenous poppy plant is entwined into Afghanistan's economy and culture, and it has created an opium addiction crisis in Afghanistan. Before the U.S. military left the country, VOA's Afghan service traveled from the mountains to the cities, documenting the depth of the situation. Ann Ball narrates for VOA.
In Afghanistan, this is where and how it sometimes ends, a drug addict's life. Health workers came to round up the addicts and take them to addiction treatment centers. But today they encounter the lifeless bodies of three addicts. Here at Kabul's Gul-e-Sokhta Bridge, the health workers face the grim and heavy chore of removing the bodies, hauling them up to the street and away for burial. If no family can be located, they will be laid in an unmarked grave with no one to mourn their loss. It is the mark of shame to be buried alone in Afghanistan. For the workers and government officials, it reminds them they cannot help everyone. Dr. Aref Wafa was working with addicts.
Especially when we come here in the winter, our goal is to save their lives. They may increase the dose due to cold or chills. When they overdose, they do not feel it. Therefore, this causes their death.
Doctors say these addicts are consuming heroin, morphine, opium, and increasingly crystal meth. The cause of death is usually a drug overdose. They are taken to a Kabul cemetery for burial. How many bodies are buried there? No one knows. Officials don't track the numbers. Ghulam Yahya's brother lost his life to addiction under the bridge. Yahya, an addict like his brother, still lives under this bridge. Now he describes the sadness and shame and how addicts' deaths are treated by religious leaders.
They said those who use drugs commit suicide. Since they commit suicide, their funeral prayers are forbidden. They cannot be washed. His mother did not bring her child to this world to end up under Pulisakota Bridge. He did not wish this for himself, but I could not bury him in any cemetery.
In Kabul's Pul-e-Sokhta area, this is not just the story of Ghulam Yahya's life. Throughout Afghanistan, it is known as a drug addiction center. The bridge in western Kabul has become a major hub for drug users for the past two decades, an iconic symbol of drug abuse in a nation rife with addiction. The addicts don't just come from Kabul, but many provinces too. Hundreds of them share this grimy space, spending their days and nights getting high amidst the waste and debris. Most of them have been evicted by their families and have no shelter. They live in squalor, surrounded by filth, black walls, and dirty water. Over the years, there have been several unsuccessful attempts to close the area, but it remains a popular gathering place for addicts.
That was Ann Ball for VOA. Still to come on VOA Asia, a rebound for the global standing of the U.S. Happening now in Asia, to mark Myanmar's annual Buddhist Taringyut Festival, which celebrates Buddha's descent from heaven, Myanmar's junta said it would release thousands of people jailed for protesting the February coup, a continuation of a mass prisoner release this week. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Continuing now on VOA Asia, approval of U.S. leadership around the world rebounded during the first 6 months of President Joe Biden's term, after a record low in the last year of President Donald Trump's administration. This according to a new Gallup survey of people in nearly 50 countries. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekoswara has this report.
While he has been plagued by low approval ratings at home in recent weeks, some good news on the global stage for U.S. President Joe Biden. According to a new Gallup report, approval of U.S. leadership has increased from 30% in 2020 to 49% as of August 2021 across 46 countries and territories. The jump is partly driven by the administration's re-engagement with the world.
Even in the first few hours and moments of the Biden administration, Biden was rejoining the Paris Agreement and also stepping back from Trump's decision to withdraw from the World Health Organization. So I think that those olive branches were really promising signs that a lot of allies were looking for.
The 49% approval rating matched the record high during President Barack Obama's first year in office in 2009. The record low, 30%, was under President Donald Trump and was likely due to his foreign policy approach.
We are truly and finally putting America first.
The Gallup report suggests Biden's messaging to the world is getting a more favorable response.
America is back. America is back. Diplomacy is back.
But the messy withdrawal from Afghanistan and the September AUKUS agreement to provide Australia with nuclear-powered submarines, canceling a prior deal with France, were deeply criticized even by U.S. allies.
They feel like they were fed a line. Oh, this is an administration that is going to rejuvenate our alliances. We care about NATO. We care about other people. We care about human rights. And then what's happened? We haven't put our money where our mouth is when it comes to Afghanistan, when it comes to the AUKUS deal with Australia. And that's really caused problems.
Despite the improvement, the U.S. is behind Germany, a country that ranked first among respondents, particularly in Europe, Asia, and the Americas. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Finally on VOA Asia, two Israeli scientists have grown a group of date palms from 2,000-year-old seeds. This year, one of the trees produced a harvest of hundreds of dates that until now had been considered extinct. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Kibbutz Keturah in Israel's Arava Desert.
In the Arava Desert of Israel, not far from the Jordanian border, a new date palm is being planted. It looks like any other date tree, but this one grew from a 2,000-year-old seed that was found at Masada, where close to 1,000 Jews committed suicide so they would not be captured by the Romans.
I thought some years ago that it would be interesting to see if they could be grown. Why? Because a lot of these species that were once here 2,000 years ago more have disappeared. So why not try and grow them from ancient seeds?
Many thought this task was impossible, but Salon and her horticulturalist partner, Elaine Soloway, succeeded in growing a tree from what Salon says is the oldest date seed ever germinated. The first tree, Methuselah, was a male and couldn't produce dates.
A few years later, we grew another seed from the Judean desert, and this was a female, and I called her Hannah, after my mum. She grew into a beautiful female tree and started flowering, and so we took Methuselah's pollen and we pollinated Hannah, and lo and behold, this is what we got. The first Judean dates in 2,000 years.
The dates are drier than most Israeli dates. Salon says they may have medicinal properties, having been used in ancient times to treat bowel problems, depression, and even as aphrodisiacs. Historians say the renewal of these dates can make history come alive.
Dates, of course, were part of the staple of the Mediterranean diet, part of the triad of dates, olive oil, and wine, all of which was found up at Masada as well. Dates were used in many dishes. We have ancient cookbooks. It was one of the main sources of sweetness, date, honey, and so forth. So this brings us closer in a very physical, tangible way to the people who lived 2,000 years ago.
This ability of the date seeds, and maybe not only date seeds, but seeds to remain dormant for so many thousands of years and then spring back to life, I think is a vitally important part of nature's ability to restore and renew itself. And I guess in an age of species decline and climate change, this is like a bright light in an otherwise very difficult period that the world is going through now.
Perhaps ancient dates can give us solutions to modern problems. For VOA News, Linda Gradstein at Kibbutz Keturah.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. That's all the time we have here on VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Casco in Washington. Enjoy the day and be well.